In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones you'll actually want to hear about. We need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. Go to podsurvey.com/firstdegree and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way we can bring on advertisers that you won't want to skip. And once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/firstdegree. podsurvey.com/firstdegree. Thanks for your help.
The first degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
The first degree.
You see it on the news. You see it on the paper. You see it on Facebook.
These things are supposed to happen in movies, not in real life.
It was a domino effect. From the time 911 was called, it went from the 911 caller to the coroner to the detective. The only witness you have that's saying it's a suicide is the suspect.
Welcome to The First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. My name is Jack Vanek, and I am sitting, 200 feet away from Alexis Linkletter because we're in New York City, baby.
Woo. Not that we can do anything.
No, sorry. By New York City, I mean we're trapped in a hotel room in New York City and can't really leave or do anything. But you know, it's better than being trapped in my apartment in LA. And speaking of LA, Billy Jensen holding the fort down in LA.
I'm holding the fort down in LA. Literally, everything's all good here.
He's literally in a fort.
I'm in a blanket fort right now.
Yeah, he's literally holding the fort down. So, I mean, Billy, how does it feel to be the odd one out? Because I'm usually the odd one out.
You know what? It's okay. It rained yesterday, and it's been nice in LA, but I do miss you guys.
I'm glad that we are missing all of the rainy weather. But
I'm glad that we're missed. That feels nice.
Did he say he missed us?
Yeah,
okay. He just did. I must have glossed over it. Billy, what day is it today?
Okay, so today is a very special day for me, actually. January 27th, it's a Wednesday. It's National Chocolate Cake Day.
Ooh. Yeah.
And I will say chocolate cake is probably, right behind steak, my favorite food. And my favorite chocolate cake, at least from the store, was Entenmann's Fudge Ice Devil's Food Cake.
Mm. I don't like a packaged cake. I like like steakhouse. Speaking of steak, I like a molten
you put lava
your fork in it. Yeah, and then it overflows with fudge. I don't like a packaged cake at all. I need like a fresh cake situation. But I don't even like cake. But if I'm gonna do it, I need like a
dessert cake.
Yeah.
You know what I'm gonna do today now, since it is chocolate cake day? I'm gonna get a Sprinkles chocolate cupcake. I think
great idea.
Nothing like a Sprinkles cake. What are there any other good days, Billy?
It's National Geographic Day. Oh. A fine magazine, if there ever was one.
A fine channel. It's a TV channel also.
It is also a channel
fine
as well.
Fine brand. Yeah. Anything else of note?
It's Thomas Crapper Day.
Crapper?
What's that?
You know who Thomas... He's the guy that apparently invented the toilet.
Sounds like a lie.
Okay.
Thomas Crapper. All right.
But I will say, I didn't even realize... we record these in advance, everyone. The 27th. Me and Billy's other podcast also comes out today.
Oh my gosh.
Long Island Serial Killer.
That's right.
Sorry. I should have definitely led with that.
No, I literally just forgot. So no, that's okay. Enough said with that. But if you like this, check that out. It's really riveting.
Happy release day, guys.
Yes. Unraveled Long Island Serial Killer. Download it. Subscribe.
Rate it.
Rate. Review.
Check it out. It's going to blow your mind. But
five stars.
I was going to say that's enough of that, but I didn't want to hijack your line.
Well, don't take my line. That's enough of that. So let's turn down the lights.
And turn up your anxiety.
Because this could be you.
So today's case takes us back to October 3rd of 2016, not that long ago. Top songs on the Billboard chart were Closer by the Chainsmokers and Halsey and Heathens by 21 Pilots. Movies Inferno and Keeping Up with the Joneses were in theaters.
The setting for today's case is Walker County, Georgia. And according to the Walker County website, the boundaries of Walker County were originally set in 1833, carved from neighboring Maury County and land once belonging to the Cherokee tribe. And several major battles have occurred in Walker County over the years, including the Battle of Chickamauga, the second bloodiest battle during the Civil War.
In today's episode, we're going to introduce you to our first degree straightaway. This is Amanda, and our case today revolves around her brother, DJ.
We grew up in a little town called Chickamauga, Georgia. It's a little hole in the wall. You blink your eyes, if you drive through, you're going to miss it.
Amanda grew up in this town with her family. She was one of four children, and she was particularly close to her brother, DJ.
We had an older sister, and then we had a younger sister, and then I was older than DJ, but me and DJ were the middle children, and we were the closest. We had a great childhood. I mean, we had a mom and dad, you know, that were loving parents. They took care of us. Our dad was a Vietnam veteran. He had a lot of health issues there in the last few years of his life. He developed cancer, and he actually passed away when DJ was 14 years old. And with DJ being the only boy, he was really, really close to his dad. DJ was angry with God about that because DJ was a churchgoer. You know, he went to church all the time. When my dad died, he was at that age where he didn't understand.
So when Amanda and DJ's father died, DJ took it the hardest. And like many do, DJ looked for distraction for his pain.
He started getting in with the wrong crowd, being 14 years old, and he didn't have that father figure in his life anymore to keep him on the right path. He started smoking pot and doing what normal, typical teenagers would do.
But despite the fact that DJ did sort of fall into the quote-unquote wrong type of crowd in his teenage years, it didn't stop him from graduating high school and turning into a great guy. By the time DJ reached his high school graduation, Amanda and DJ's family had actually picked up and moved to Alabama. But the part of Alabama that they lived in was on the Georgia border, and a drive to their hometown was just a really quick trip if they wanted to go and visit. So that's exactly what DJ did often when he wanted to go see his old high school buddies. He went back frequently because he didn't have any friends where they moved to in Alabama. And it's when he was back hanging with his buddies that he crossed paths with a girl named Brandy.
He actually knew Brandy from school. I think she was in a grade under him. They were not close, like they wasn't friends or anything, but they knew of one another. After DJ got out of school, they would run into each other, hanging out with mutual friends.
So while DJ and Brandy hadn't had much of a relationship in high school, there was an instant pull when they reconnected.
When they first got together, they were both on cloud nine.
The two of them were madly in love, and Amanda was happy to add another sister to the family.
She came from a bad family, and her mom was never really in her life. She was an only girl of all boys, so she never knew what it was like to have a sister or anything like that. So when we met Brandy, we welcomed her with open arms. We treated her like a normal sister. She was family to us.
DJ and Brandy's relationship continued to progress. Eventually, Brandy discovered that she was pregnant, and DJ was thrilled to learn he was going to be a dad.
The first child was born, and they got married. You could just see the joy and the happiness in their face, and they were just so happy.
Brandy and DJ's relationship progressed in that textbook way you'd expect a loving relationship to progress. A few years later, Brandy learned she was expecting again, and this time, to their delight, it was twins. After the twins were born, Brandy and DJ were the proud parents of now three children. DJ was 27 and Brandy was 26. DJ was still a church-loving man and belonged to the Oakwood Baptist Church. And life was really good. And both Brandy and DJ loved their family. There's no denying that the stress of such incredible responsibility for such a young couple can take its toll. So both DJ and Brandy would indulge in some partying to blow off steam. And many of their friends would congregate at this one particular party house in Georgia.
The person that lived in the house was called Old Man. That's what everybody called him. And it was like the place to be. It was like the hangout spot. That's where everybody hung out. There was drugs involved. So at any given time, there was multiple people living there, staying there, in and out at all times. And DJ and Brandy was hanging out there and staying there on and off for about 7 or 8 months.
So Brandy and DJ spent a lot of time having fun with their friends at this house, and all was good until a guy named Mike showed up.
And then all of a sudden, this Mike guy comes in, and he ends up moving a camper onto the property and is living in the camper.
And Mike's arrival at this house is when things began to fall apart between DJ and Brandy.
I have to say the twins were born in 2015 was when we knew she was having an affair.
Brandy and Mike had somehow formed a connection, and she started cheating on DJ, and she seemed to be doing it right in front of his face.
After he moved in onto the property in the camper, that's when Brandy started having the affair with Mike. We knew about it right away. DJ told us about it. He talked about how much he didn't like him. He hated him. Anybody would. I mean, if your spouse was cheating on someone, you're not going to very well be friends with that person, you know?
But DJ, despite Brandy's cheating, he didn't want to give up on his relationship with her and desperately wanted to keep his family together. However, this very unhealthy love triangle seemed to be cemented and a very painful pattern became clear. But no matter what, DJ was not giving up on his wife. Their vows were extremely important to him.
He loved her. He loved Brandy with everything in him. I could not count on two hands how many times Brandy left DJ to be with Mike. But every time she left DJ to be with Mike, DJ would win her back over. And she would come back home with DJ. They would be fine for a couple of weeks. Brandy would pick a fight, take back off up to Georgia to be with Mike. It was just a routine. It was so predictable.
And for those of you who are dialed into the true crime world, you're well aware. There are few things more powerful and more of a driving force than the aspects of adultery, love, jealousy, betrayal, and that hatred that manifests itself as a result of these things. And our first degree, Amanda, watched helplessly from the sidelines as Brandy yo-yoed with her brother's emotions.
I've never hated anyone. I didn't like the way she was treating my brother. You know, we told him, move on, find somebody else. She's not good for you. He would always say, you know, I'll always love her. She's the mother of my kids. He never would give up on her.
As time went on, and as Brandy went back and forth between DJ and Mike, one could have predicted that the rivalry between the two men would escalate to violence.
He had no anger towards Brandy. He was more hurt than anything, but there was a lot of anger between him and Mike. There was several incidents where they had physical altercations.
And these physical altercations happened at the same party house where the affair between Brandy and Mike began. And remember, Mike lived there on the property in his camper.
There was one incident where DJ was walking out of the home and Mike was outside waiting on him with a ball bat. And when DJ came out of the home, he hit DJ with a ball bat. DJ grabs up a golf club out of the yard and they start fighting it out with one another. DJ ends up knocking Mike's tooth out.
And then a second incident occurred.
There was another incident where DJ and Brandy were standing outside on a swing talking to one another. They were working things out and getting back together. It's right outside of Mike's camper. So he's overhearing their conversation and they're talking about moving back to Alabama. Well, Mike comes out of that camper with a shotgun and puts it to Brandy's head and tells her to get inside the camper, that she wasn't leaving. The only way she was leaving out of there was in a body bag. She goes into the camper. He beats the hell out of her that night.
So I bet you're wondering, what was DJ thinking? How much of this is he supposed to take? He loved Brandy, and not only has Mike assaulted him, he's now hurt the women he loves too. And in this particular incident where Brandy was assaulted, DJ was helpless because Mike was swinging his shotgun around and threatening to shoot them. So after this encounter where Mike assaulted Brandy, she wisely left Mike and went back to DJ. She didn't want to be with a man who could thoughtlessly beat her. And once DJ had Brandy back, he was thrilled. And it seemed like finally this reconciliation between the two of them was going to stick and perhaps his family would be put back together again. Amanda remembers the relief in her brother's voice at that time.
They were back together. He called to check on the kids. Everything was fine. This was October. We always have a big Halloween costume party every year. He was talking about what he wanted the kids to dress up as for Halloween, what he was going to go as Halloween. He wasn't angry. He wasn't unhappy. He wasn't any of those things. He was a DJ. He was normal DJ.
Maybe this was it. Maybe this time, DJ and Brandy really could and would get their relationship back on track. That was certainly Amanda's hope for her brother, and she expected she'd hear an update from him soon. But only a few days later, she received a call from her mother.
I have one little girl. I was homeschooling her. She was in kindergarten. And my mom called me, and she was just hysterical, screaming. She was crying, I could not make out anything she was saying. And just out of nowhere, she said, DJ's dead. And I went into shock mode. And I kept saying, no, 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 no. I ran to the bedroom, and I turned the bedroom light on, and I told my husband, I just screamed, DJ's dead. And he jumps up, and I remember falling to the floor. I was just shaking hysterically.
So what the hell happened here? Amanda is processing this emotionally traumatizing and heartbreaking news while also calling other close family members, and she begins hearing bits and pieces of what happened. So Amanda had been told that DJ had been killed by a gunshot blast to the head. But here's the crazy thing. They were being told that DJ had shot himself in the head, and this is unbelievable to their family. None of this was making sense, and Amanda refused to believe that her brother would take his own life, especially not as things were getting back on track with Brandy and his family.
He was making future plans, you know, and he wasn't suicidal. He wasn't depressed.
Not only did Amanda believe that DJ would never take his own life, but the information that she was hearing about the events that transpired on that day completely contradicted that possibility. And here's why.
Now, this is the day that it happened. Before my mom called and told me that he was dead, DJ was texting her just out of the blue. You know, he texted her and said, hey, you've got to come get me now. And she asked him, she said, what is it, DJ? I'm sick. And he said, I'm going to end up dead here if you don't come and get me. And my mom was hesitant.
Amanda and DJ's mom was hesitant because even though they all loved Brandy and DJ, they were all a little emotionally exhausted by the constant drama between the two of them. DJ's mom responded and said the following.
I'm sick, DJ. I can't take the stress. There's always stress with you too. I can't take it.
And once the word of DJ's death began to spread, more information about the day came to light.
I posted on Facebook, you know, for everyone to please pray for my family. And my cousin had sent me a message and said I was just talking to him. And she sent me screenshots of where they were talking back and forth. DJ had sent her a message that asked her, hey, can you come get me? And she said, sorry, I can't. And he said, well, it'll save my life.
As Amanda is piecing things together, her husband picked up their mom, and they drove to the party house where DJ had been shot. They wanted to get more information about what had happened.
So my mom arrives at the location. There's one detective there. He's already in his car about to back out of the driveway. And my mom knocks on his window and asks for him to make sure to get a gun residue sample from everybody that was there at the home. He assured her that he had already done that. DJ's body had already been taken by the time she got there, but they let her walk up into the house and see the aftermath of where my brother had been shot. The scene was never roped off. It was not treated as a crime scene because it was called in as a suicide.
Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't, and the real world makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For The RealReal, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day.
At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The RealReal has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on therealreal.com using code FIRST. That's therealreal.com using the code FIRST.
So I bet you're wondering, who exactly called 911 and reported DJ's suicide? Who discovered his body? And before we tell you that, let's talk about the timing of this 911 call. It was made just moments after DJ was frantically texting loved ones to come pick him up.
3 minutes after the last text messages were sent from DJ, Mike calls 911 and says, "Hey, we got a guy here that shot himself."
Yes. It was DJ's romantic rival who had called 911. And Mike claimed that DJ shot himself. Here's that call.
Walker County 911.
Sir, I need an ambulance at 862 Nicky Gat Road.
Okay, what's the problem?
We got a guy who shot himself.
Okay, what did he shoot himself with?
A shotgun.
Okay, is he breathing?
It looks like it. I don't know. I just think
how old is he?
I tried to get the gun. And it went off. And he had it in his mouth. And I was like, man.
What is it, a 12 gauge?
Yeah.
Is he still able to talk?
Huh?
Is he still able to talk?
No. I mean, he's stuck in his mouth.
All right. Is he still breathing?
Yeah, it looks like it.
How old is he? Walk Central, Packet 803, Station 2, respond.
He hangs up on 911 three different times. He never tries to assist DJ in any way. He makes every 911 call more about him than he does DJ. He's telling them that he picked the gun up to see what it was. He says, they keep asking him if DJ was breathing, and he doesn't try to render aid. He doesn't try to do CPR. He doesn't do anything.
Mike made that 911 call. But here's the thing. When the police arrived, they didn't have any background information. So Mike was in control of the scene, and all of the preliminary information law enforcement collected upon arrival, the information that helped them make a deduction about what had happened, was coming from Mike. He was in charge. And Mike was claiming that DJ shot himself in the head using Mike's shotgun. And what's especially weird is that DJ had been shot fatally in the left side of his face with a shotgun at a downward angle, even though DJ was right-handed. But of course, at the time, the police had no way of knowing that.
The first responding officer gets on the scene, and he tells the first responding officer that the gun was on a shelf over DJ's body on the wall. So he goes in, he clears the scene.
Side note, when Amanda says he, she means Mike.
The first responders get there, you know, they check for signs of life and everything. The coroner and the detective show up at the same time. I know in different states, coroners mean different things. The coroners in Georgia are not medical examiners. They basically just transport bodies, things like that. The coroner had been the coroner for 23 years in this county. He's a joke. They go in. They first question who all's there, and Mike tells them that it was just him, DJ, and Brandy. Well, the truth would come out later on that there was actually about eight or nine people there. And as soon as the shooting took place, everybody took off and left the scene. And after law enforcement showed up, they all started coming back in to make it look like they had just got there. So the detective started asking, you know, what happened and everything. Within 5 minutes, he catches Mike in several lies.
Mike's story allegedly then changes several times. So first, he was in the far bedroom when he heard the gun go off, and then he saw DJ sitting there with a gunshot wound. Then in his next breath, he said he was outside the house when he heard the gun go off. Then a few minutes later, he apparently says he tried to wrestle the gun away from DJ when it went off. So this begs the question, wouldn't this morphing story set off some kind of alarm bells for the detective? I mean, even if the detective is young and inexperienced.
The detective caught on to it. He caught on to these red flags. And I believe, in my opinion, with him being a new, you know, being inexperienced, being in training, he was catching on to these things. But here you have a coroner that's been a coroner for 23 years and has pretty much seen it all, you know. He's more experienced. He goes in and says, yeah, it's a suicide because we have a witness that says it's a suicide.
But this coroner had no idea that the guy who is saying that DJ's death is a suicide is the person with the most motive to kill him and the person who has threatened DJ's life on several different occasions.
Well, that witness is the suspect, for one. The only witness you have that's saying it's a suicide is the suspect. Okay? But the detective is going along with the coroner because he's more experienced, but at the same time, he's seeing these red flags. He's still picking up on things, but he didn't do what he should have done.
And you know those people who are at the house who likely witnessed this all go down and then started to come back as if they were just arriving? Well, they all play dumb about what happened. Sounds like really good friends. But what about Brandy? DJ's wife and the mother of his children? What did she do?
Brandy seen it all. They questioned her at the scene with Mike standing right beside her. She's hysterical. She can't get anything out. She can't talk. She's just in shock. So they couldn't get anything out of her. And they told her to go to the camper and that they would come back and talk to her in a few days after she had time to calm down.
As the chaos at the scene was unfolding, Amanda's husband had arrived at the house with DJ's mother.
When my husband and my mom got to the scene, Brandy jumped in the SUV with my mom and my husband, wanting to leave with them. And I regret them making this decision every day, but at the time, we knew DJ didn't kill himself. We knew who did kill him. We just didn't know if Brandy had a role in it or what role she played in it. So when she jumped in the SUV to leave with my mom and husband, my husband told her, you're not going with us. And like I said, I regret that every day because I know now, had they have took her with them, she would have told them what happened right then and there.
Whether Brandy had gone with them or not, so many mistakes had already been made, which would ultimately set into motion Amanda's years-long battle of fighting for justice for her brother, DJ.
DJ had been dead for an hour and a half, 2 hours, before we were even notified that he was dead. On the way up to the crime scene, my mom got called. It was the coroner of the county. She told him that this was not a suicide, that she had proof that she had text messages from her son begging for someone to save his life. And the coroner told her, well, we know it was a suicide because we have a witness that's seen him do it.
The day after the murder, Brandy's aunt picked her up from the party house where this all went down. And Brandy told her aunt everything. After that, Brandy's aunt called Amanda and DJ's mother and told her everything. So here's a story that Brandy told. Here's what Brandy said.
She was in the bathroom fixing her hair. DJ was sitting on the love seat, texting his mom. So when she walked out of the bathroom, she's in the kitchen going towards the bedroom. She said about the same time that her eyes met DJ's eyes, that Mike walked out of the bedroom behind DJ's left shoulder, pointed the gun at DJ, called him a motherfucker. DJ looked up, and Mike pulled the trigger and shot him.
So everything should be straightened out now, right? After Brandy told the truth about what she saw. Now the police have the context they need to investigate this properly. Now they have the background information about this romantic rivalry between Mike and DJ. They now know about the text messages where DJ is begging for a ride out of this place like his life depends on it. They now have Mike's evolving story about what happened that day. And they have Brandy, an eyewitness who saw the entire thing. It's a clear case of homicide. So what happened next? Well, believe it or not, it actually gets worse.
Mike was finally brought in for questioning. He was given a polygraph, and they asked him to reenact how the shooting occurred.
The polygraph examiner told Mike, he said, "I'm just having a really hard time understanding how you're trying to tell me that this shooting occurred." So Mike did a reenactment of the shooting, and the way he reenacted the shooting, the gun would have went off in an upward angle. It would have went from bottom to top. And the polygraph examiner says in the video, there's no possible way the shooting occurred the way he says it did. So basically, he failed the reenactment of the shooting, and he also failed the polygraph examination.
Mike was let go, and the matter of death on DJ's autopsy was marked as suicide.
So he failed the polygraph examination. He failed a reenactment of the shooting. You have two witnesses that say that he came out of that bedroom with the gun. It was cocked and it was loaded, and he pointed it at DJ. One says that he don't think that he meant to shoot DJ. The other one says that he intentionally shot DJ. They knew all of this information, but because GBI had it ruled a suicide based on that false information sent to them, the DA concludes that it is a suicide, and they close the case.
The DA closed the case, ruled DJ's death as suicide. Infuriating, right? Completely infuriating. And to Amanda and her family, completely soul-crushing. How did this happen?
It was a domino effect. From the time 911 was called, it went from the 911 caller to the coroner to the detective. During the whole investigation, the Walker County Sheriff's Department detectives never once picked up the telephone and called GBI and told them, "Hey, this may be something other than a suicide. We're looking at this as a possible homicide case now." Never. They never had any contact with GBI whatsoever during the entire investigation.
Putting yourself in Amanda's place, you want to pull your hair out. Why hasn't more been done in a case that seems so cut and dry?
It was laziness. Nobody wanted to do their job. And I honestly think that DJ was just written off and blew off and tossed aside as if he was nothing because of where this happened at. And because of the lifestyle of some of these people. It was a known drug house. DJ was known to have done drugs in the past. They didn't care. They didn't see him as I seen him. You know, they didn't know him. He's a case number to them. That's all he is. They didn't know he had a family that loved him with everything in them. They didn't know he had three kids that were going to grow up to never remember their father because they were so young. We begged them the entire time, please bring GBI in on this and have them investigate this case. When a death occurs, the state crime lab is the one that comes in and investigates and everything. They wouldn't let them do it on DJ's case. It was just the sheriff's department that was doing it.
And if you're wondering, Brandy did not handle this whole ordeal well herself.
I can tell you for 100% certainty that she is paranoid and terrified to death of Mike. She's scared to death that he is going to kill her. She went on a downward spiral. DJ was basically the only thing that would keep Brandy from falling off. Brandy had her drug problem, but DJ kept her from going overboard. Since DJ was killed, since she witnessed what happened, Brandy spiraled out of control. Probably the last 6 months, I've not had any contact with her. I don't really know where she's at. She hasn't even seen the kids in a year. So, I mean, I couldn't tell you anything about her right now.
In a case that seems so cut and dry, you struggle to understand how the DA just closed the case. Amanda's family has been left with complete resistance in the pursuit of justice for DJ, as Mike just walks free.
For 4.5 years, I have been ignored. To this day, the sheriff of Walker County, Georgia, has never spoken to my family, ever. And it's not from lack of trying. I emailed the sheriff every week for 12 weeks straight, asking him for a meeting to sit down and talk with us. They still have the gun sitting in the evidence room, and it's never been tested for fingerprints or touch DNA or anything else. They've never tested anything. So I was willing to use my own money to have this gun tested for prints. I was willing to pay for things out of my own pocket. He never responded. He's never spoken to us, ever. And even if this was a suicide, what kind of sheriff does not have the nerve to sit down and talk to a grieving family? Nobody should be treated that way. The main obstacle, the hardest one, as long as it was listed as suicide, nothing was going to be done. I love this city. This was my hometown. I grew up there. But I cannot even go into this county without getting sick at my stomach because the way they have treated me and my brother and my family. It just makes me sick, literally.
And more than 4 years later, progress is finally being made. And it's these little victories that Amanda clings to.
I will say that after 4 very long and stressful years, GBI changed the manner of death last year from suicide to undetermined. But it was not easy. That means that the case can be reopened now. So now our obstacle is with Walker County. There is now a new DA in office. We did meet with him a couple of weeks ago. The meeting went really well. They did not do their jobs. It's not too late. They can go. They can still make this right. They can do the right thing. I've always knew that the justice system was corrupted to a certain point. I knew that there was evil in the world, and I knew that there was good cops and bad cops. I'm going through pure hell, a total nightmare, and being treated like just a piece of trash. And I'm a good person. I've never broken the law. You don't have to be a criminal or a bad person to be treated bad by law enforcement.
One of the most frustrating aspects of this is how Mike is walking free while DJ lost everything. But Amanda has kept tabs on him as she waits for the wheels of justice to turn.
We've kept track of him. Me and my private investigator have kept dibs on him over the years. I can completely understand how people can take the law into their own hands. After being put through what we have been put through, I'm not going to do it. I'm trying to do it the right way. I would actually get to grieve my brother's death. I haven't been able to do that. I've been fighting for so long. I haven't been able to grieve his death.
Amanda has words of wisdom for anyone else fighting the good fight for justice for a loved one.
Don't give up, because that's what they want you to do. They will ignore you, blow you off, run you in circles, hoping that you will eventually give up and go away. And don't. Just don't give up.
Okay, well, a huge thank you to Amanda for being our first degree guest this week. If you're listening out there and you have a story to tell, no story is too small. Please email us hello firstdegreepodcast.com. You can follow us on Instagram at The First Degree, at Alexis Linkletter, at Billy Jensen, at Jack Vanek. Join our Facebook group. We're talking true crime all the time, and we're also just talking about a bunch of random shit there in there as well. And stick around because we're going to kill this sometime.
Before we end, Amanda, we're thinking about you. You do deserve justice for your brother. And absolutely, it's really just like very demonstrative of the helplessness you can feel at the hands of law enforcement under certain circumstances. And everyone in this community is thinking about you.
Yeah, we're all rallying behind you.
Yeah, and hoping your brother gets the justice he deserves.
And remember, only you can prevent serial killers and keep your friends close.
But not that close.
Happy chocolate cake day.
Hell yeah.
Happy, happy day. Molten lava cake day. Bye. Shout out to Jared Monaco for sound design and for creating original music for The First Degree, our producing team, Caitlin Cleveland, Taylor Rogers, and Alan Santiago for Podcast One. And as always, our First Degree guests are always our largest source. Bye.
All right. Well, welcome to another episode of Killing Time. Now, I think before we begin our Killing Time episode, we need to acknowledge what Billy's setup is right now, because number one, he's wearing a hoodie, but the hood is a white hoodie.
A white hoodie.
Yes.
I can't discern between his skin and the hoodie.
It's weird because I don't know if I've ever seen you not in black, Billy. So the white is shocking. Like, you look like a ghost.
And I've also never seen you with a hoodie on your head. Like, I'm not sure what your look is.
You're not a hoodie type of a person. Do you want to explain what your thought process was while getting dressed today?
Yeah, yes. I think getting dressed is a little too on point. I didn't necessarily think I got dressed. I just grabbed something. I have not showered. My hair is a bit of a mess. In a couple days.
Billy!
No, I showered yesterday, actually. Billy. But I didn't do my hair up. And
Did we do our hair? Wait, do we do our hair for this?
I have a question, Billy. Are you a stinky person? Like, do you get stinky?
No. I don't.
Okay, neither does Jared. And I'm like, that I would love to know what that life is, but that's great. So, good for you.
Yeah, no. So, you know what? My hair was, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to put the hoodie over. This is a Muhammad Ali 1972 hoodie that I bought, and I'm quite comfortable in it. I should never have bought white because it gets dirty all the time.
And is that why?
I don't think white is your color. I'm not going to lie.
White's not my color. No.
It just looks very unnatural on you.
I know.
It's highly unusual.
But it's so comfortable. So.
Well, there you go.
Just rolling with it. Yeah.
So we are doing this episode. Alexis and I are actually near each other for once, which is delightful. And Billy,
I'm in room 113 and Jack is room 112.
Really?
but they're opposite sides of the hall for some reason. It's really weird.
I know. Mm-hmm. Should we explain our situation? So we're in New York City and we're both going to be on this TV show, and they make us quarantine before, which is great. Like, great COVID practices. I feel very safe that they're doing this, but they teased us by making us quarantine for 4 days, but putting us in rooms that are 112 and 113. And it's just like, you should have put us across the city from each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, luckily our acts of friendship and love transcend quarantine. Cause I'll be like, hey girl, do you want a bagel? And I'll like leave a bagel at her door. Or I'll be like, hey girl, do you want this? And she texts me and she's like, hey girl, want a coffee? But I'm like, dead asleep for 3 hours longer after she texts me that. So, but like, I will say the quarantine, our friendship has transcended that.
It really has, but it's a sad state of affairs. But we were finally allowed to see each other today, and it was like just the best moment that I've ever had.
And yeah, and I ordered a really amazing pizza it was really good in theory. But I had like 3 bites of it and I feel sick, and I'm like, I have a whole pizza of this. It's useless. They put Alfredo sauce on it.
I know. We need. Okay. So Alexis, Alexis has been like ordering her way through New York City when it comes to cuisine, and has tried the same pasta like four different times.
Okay, well, hear me out. So in New York, Billy knows this because in Long Island I did this. I like get obsessed with carbs. I don't really eat mm-hmm. bread that much in New York. But there's this pasta called in LA I don't eat carbs that much, but in LA in New York I'm obsessed with carbs, and there's this pasta they have in New York that they don't really have anywhere in LA, and it's called cavatelli. And the one I want is like creamy, delicious goodness. And I've ordered like four every night I'm here, and they're none of them are measuring up. And then I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have my bagel. I have to check that off my carb list. I'm going to have pizza. I have to check that off my list. And like soon I'm done, and then I can just start eating my normal shit. But no one does carbs like New York. And that's what I'm trying to like satisfy my carb cravings.
Now, why is that? Billy, as the elder, I feel like you would know. Why is New York better with carbs? Because I would think maybe back in the day when it was certain people like Italians were more New York than they are anywhere else. But I'm sure there's some Italians in the rest of the country, but just the Italian food doesn't match up to New York Italian food, New York pizza. Why is that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a couple things. One, obviously, New York was the melting pot. You had a lot of different people from immigrants from other countries. They introduced their favorite foods there. But when it comes to bagels and pizza, supposedly it's about the water. And the water in New York, when they make the dough, is different than anywhere else in the country or really anywhere else in the world. And that's why you can't replicate the bagels or the pizza anywhere else.
Oh, this would make sense. I mean, there's nothing like a New York bagel.
Oh my gosh. When we were both eating that New York bagel, it was just, that was one of the best bagels and cream cheese I've ever had.
I know. Cause usually
I ordered the other morning.
Usually I have a bagel, like the bagel is the vessel for the cream cheese. It's what's more about the cream cheese than the bagel, but this bagel was more about the bagel. And that's when you know.
That's when you know.
That it's a fantastic bagel. Lex, what have you been doing to pass your what has been your favorite thing to pass the quarantine time while we've been here?
Well, mostly my temperature has fluctuated a lot. So I wake up sweating in like a panic, and then I open the frigid door. I open the balcony door, and then a gust of frigid air comes in, and then I start shivering, and then I'm mostly trying to manage my temperature. And then beyond that, several baths a day.
Yeah, it's definitely been a shower bath situation.
Yeah, and beyond that, it's like deciding what carb I'm going to have that evening. Like, there's really been not much. I mean, I work a ton, but that's boring to talk about. As far as the exciting stuff, it's like the carb adventure, the bath adventure, and the temperature navigating truth that I have had to face.
I've definitely been
taking... What about you, Jack?
Well, I've been taking three showers a day. I take my morning shower just to start my day. Then I take my afternoon shower when I feel disgusting because we're stuck in this room. I looked at my Steps app.
No, don't do that.
For the
don't
last do that again. 3 days. Yesterday, I took 132 steps total.
Oh my God. No.
So
I don't even want to look at mine. Mine's probably worse.
The only reason, I mean, we're allowed to go into the lobby of this hotel. So it's been picking up my random Postmates orders has been the only form of exercise that I've gotten. So you don't feel grosser than when you're sitting in the same spot all day long with literally no physical movement whatsoever. So I take my second shower when that starts to really set in around 4 p.m., like a happy hour shower. And then I take my nightly shower when I'm ready to go to bed, and I lather myself up and I do all my skincare and all that nice stuff. So that has been how I'm passing my time.
I'm so down for that, though. I'm going to do that when we get off here. I'm going to do that. We were allowed out today. Me and Jack went on a walk in Central Park safely. And then we had this meeting. And then on our way home, we went to Duane Reade and we got lotions and face masks. So as soon as we're off tonight, that's what I'm going to – your girl's going to be face masking, lotioning, buffing, all those things.
You were able to find a Duane Reade in New York?
It's literally right next door to our hotel.
I know. He's joking.
Good one, Billy. Another fucking – you hit another joke right out of the park, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, it was really funny. Billy, what have you been doing without us? Are you holding the fort down in LA?
I am holding the fort down in LA. I'm watching a lot of Cobra Kai.
Is Cobra Kai good? My mom is obsessed with Cobra Kai.
It really is good. It is well written. It doesn't lean on the nostalgia too much because it could stand on its own, but the nostalgia gives it just a little bit of a kick.
Do you need to have watched the first one?
The first season? Karate Kid?
Karate Kid.
You've never seen Karate Kid?
I saw Karate Kid when I was like really young, but I don't remember anything from it.
All right, you should watch it again to psych yourself up for whatever you're doing in the day. You should watch it every morning, actually.
It just doesn't
seem another one of your jokes because it's not landing.
Landing like the way the crane cook would land? It's an inside joke. See, you know what? There's going to be people out there be like, yeah, I get it.
Please.
Billy, if we watched it, we would get it. We haven't seen it yet.
It's okay.
Yeah, but you've seen Karate Kid, though.
Several years ago.
It's these deep cut jokes that I'll never catch them, even on shows that I've watched like a million times. But that's what Billy is. He's a deep cut joke maker.
I'm a deep cut joke guy.
We love it. Do we want to do some Facebook questions?
Sure.
Sure, we can do a couple.
We'll do a few Facebook questions before we leave today. By the way, I found some gummy bears, and if anybody has ever had a grapefruit flavored gummy bear, it is
the bomb.com.
Okay. Well, this is a good question because Alexis and I did this earlier tonight. What is your go-to last-minute snack that you grab in the checkout aisle? Like, you know how they have all the snacks like below at a CVS or like on the side at a grocery store? What's the thing that you always grab?
Should I go first?
Yeah.
I didn't do it tonight because I didn't see it, but at my at-home Rite Aid, which I miss, Cheez-Its or Goldfish. I'm always grabbing a cheesy, savory cracker. Like, that's what I would grab. Like, when I'm feeling angry at the world and I'm like, you ate so healthy, and there's like a bag of Cheez-Its, I'm like, do that. And that's what I do. Or a Hot Pocket if the frozen aisle is nearby. But
that's all I'm talking about.
The frozen aisle's not.
Anyways, Cheez-Its or Goldfish would be the correct answer.
Because they're truly the perfect one serving package, too.
Because you don't want to buy a whole box. You don't want to buy a whole bag because they'll go stale if you're like not home for a few days. You want a single serving of Cheez-Its to feel good about yourself.
Have we had this debate of Cheez-Its versus Goldfish?
Cheez-Its hands down.
Jesus. Really? Yeah. See, I'm a Goldfish person.
But they're so bland compared to Cheez-Its. Cheez-Its are so much more flavorful and cheesy.
We're going to have to do a taste test right next to each other and you will be turned.
Jacqueline knows what they both taste like. That's the difference.
She needs to have a reality checked in the moment.
I've seen her eat both. She knows.
I love both. Don't get me wrong. I love a Cheez-It and a Goldfish. But the thing that I like about Goldfishes is they're less oily than a Cheez-It. They're more
Cheez-Its. Goldfish, you get more bang for your buck. They're better for you. Like, Cheez-Its are bad for you. They're like slices of cheese.
Goldfish, you can also get the carton. I don't see a carton of Cheez-Its available anywhere.
You are not wrong.
I mean, I could eat that entire carton of Goldfish, and it's just very nostalgic. It just reminds me of my childhood, a Cheez-It. Billy, what's your go-to grab-and-go snack situation?
Your checkout snack.
Beef jerky.
Oh, that's a good one.
Beef jerky without MSG, yeah.
But is it like a Slim Jim or like
I'll do a Slim Jim every now and again.
I feel like Slim Jims definitely have MSG in them.
But I believe that they do. But maybe like one of those healthy Slim Jims, but yeah.
Billy, I also feel like this is new. Like, what about Billy 2 years ago? Like, what would you be unhealthy, you know what, Billy?
No, for 5 years I've been – before that, it would be
– 5 years?
Yes.
I don't believe
before
you.
Before that, it would be a Reese's.
Have you had the Reese's Take Fives that have the pretzels in them?
It's too much. It's a whole to-do.
Billy – a few years ago, you weren't eating Slim Jims. You were eating like the worst thing at the checkout.
I love how you're saying Slim Jim like it's a healthy snack too.
It's it's healthier than like a Cheez-It. I mean, I'm not bagging on it because of the health. It's a checkout snack. It's supposed to be bad for you.
A grab and go.
Yeah.
What about you, Jack?
I can do, if I'm doing like a salty situation, it would definitely be a Goldfish. But if I'm doing a chocolatey situation, and this is not like my normal chocolate
likings, but mm-hmm. I'll get the Hershey's cookies and cream bar.
Ooh, yum.
Unexpected.
Mysterious.
Unexpected, like but delicious.
That's honestly, white chocolate, which is not chocolate.
Yeah, and I don't like a white chocolate, but there's something, and I don't even like Oreos, so I don't know what the fuck is going
on. That's really weird.
Yeah. In that bar, but I do love a cookies and cream, and it is just such a delightful snack. So either that or like a Snickers.
Mm. Oh, Snickers is undeniably amazing.
Alexis asked me to get a Snickers today when we were checking out, but I got a Twix, and that's my third one.
Well, what's really funny is I was like, get that Snickers and I'll get this dark chocolate Kit Kat. And then I completely forgot to get the Kit Kat. Yeah.
And I got a Twix.
But I did get the beer. I got beer. But I completely forgot. I was a little drunk when we were there.
You were?
I was. I was like, I ordered a $50 pizza that I had one bite of. Fuck.
It's okay, Alexis. You know, Sunday fun day. Or whatever.
We're doing our best. It was our first time out in 4 days. So like I know, we didn't leave a single room in 4 days. So we're just doing our best.
Doing our best. All right. Well, I think that we killed enough time.
We did. 14 minutes and 35 seconds. Beep, beep.